Radio.
You're listening to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast that explores the bold projects, exciting opportunities, and the growing reach of blockchain and cryptocurrency. Whether you've got skin in the game or you're just crypto curious, keep an open mind, enjoy the conversation, and stay CryptoCurrent. Now here's your host, Richard Carthon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of CryptoCurrent. Your host here, Richard Carthon. And today I got a special guest all the way out in San Francisco. We've got Imre with Coda. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Happy to have you here. So before we get too heavy into this, how about you give us a little background on yourself?
Absolutely. So as you introduced me, I am a part of the Coda protocol. I head up business development over here. And I've been in crypto for quite a number of years now, I guess, around about 5 years or so. My first forte was a quick gig at Ripple, which most listeners will probably be familiar with. And then I spent after that two years and some months at Coinbase, which is one of the larger exchanges here in the US and globally. Yeah. And then for the past 10 months or so, I've been at the Coda protocol.
Wow. So you, I mean, sounds like you have been working in the crypto space for quite a bit and a lot of different really cool projects. What was your first intro into the crypto and blockchain space? What piqued your interest?
Yeah, I'd say it had two different perspectives, perhaps one of them more personal and then the other more professional. On the personal side, so I originally am from Turkey and have moved to the US, what is it now, like 7 or 8 years ago. And, you know, as anyone that's moved around across borders and countries will know, the minute you cross borders, the financial infrastructure that we rely on every single day ceases to work as efficiently. So suddenly, you know, banks are not as smooth as they should be. Your money is stuck in some transfer or some other country. Your credit card doesn't work, yada, yada, yada. So that personal experience kind of made me realize, all right, you know, it is a global world, and it's one of the most basic infrastructures and utilities doesn't work as efficiently as it should. So that's like when I started looking into, you know, Bitcoin and like, oh wow, this is actually a completely different way of how things can work. On the professional side, in a prior life, I was working at Intel, the chip company, and one of the projects I was in charge of was putting together a like a NFC or touch type payment system. So I think Apple Pay, right? And you know, when you start being in charge of a project like that, you start learning how antiquated and complex the entire back end of a simple payment transaction is. There's all sorts of, you know, banks and issuers and different type of token issuers, which are more like credit card tokens. So that also made me think, okay, like, you know, on a personal side, I'm interested in this stuff. And maybe there's something to do here professionally as well. And that's when I was also going to grad school. So it gave me a chance to kind of, you know, unplug from the daily routine of work life a bit and actually looked into this place closely. And that's when I got started getting involved in the companies I mentioned at a professional capacity.
Right. Awesome. So about what year is this, roughly?
This is 2014-15.
Wow. Okay. So you got into the game pretty early. And so as you're starting to work through the various companies, you know, you eventually land on Coda. So like, tell us about that transition from your previous companies to Coda and what y'all are working on.
Yeah. So I guess when I first, you know, started looking into, as I said, Bitcoin and then eventually ended up at Ripple, I was trying to understand, okay, here's this wildly new and innovative and disruptive way of approaching this problem of payments and global finance. But there's such a big industry here, like the entire world and banks and everything. So it didn't, I guess, appeal to my back then naive mind and like, you know, how like these kind of hackers and cypherpunks could unearth this like mega industry. So, you know, I, as I mentioned, I did a quick stint at Ripple and I saw like how hard it is to convince these people and how hard it is to get them to actually experiment and do products on this. Like they call this, you know, in business jargon, like innovation theater, what most banks are doing, right? Like they seem like they're on the cutting edge, but it's actually a very small department in a large company that's kind of playing around with this thing. So that's when I realized, okay, right, like it's more about these public permissionless blockchains such as Bitcoin. But still, I felt like I need to learn a bit more and see how the users and service providers interact. And also wanted to be, frankly, like at a, you know, at an exciting, fast-growing startup. So that's right. How I landed at Coinbase, which was and I wrote about this publicly as well as I was leaving Coinbase. It's like a what they call a crypto MBA, which sounds you know funny and yeah cliche. But it's right in that you get to learn a bit of everything that's going on in the industry. So like just to give a quick example of the type of projects I was involved in, like it was anything from like the API platform of the main Coinbase product to setting up the custody business, to a couple of M&As, to the wallet product, which is like a dApp type browser, to writing USDC eventually on the business side, which is the stablecoin that Coinbase and another partner released. So that gave me a great overview, but it also showed me that we're actually very, very early, right?
So early.
Yeah. And most people say we're like in 1990s internet stage. I actually think we're much earlier than that. It's more like mainframe computers, like 1970s, big ass, you know, room computers in a room type stage. So, And like, there's so much technical. It's less about, I think, like the path forward from here. It's what's critical is less about like institutions bringing in money or stuff like that, which are gonna happen and obviously are important, but more about like the some of the technological innovations that still need to happen, such as right, like with mainframe computers, there's a decent amount of users, but not like what we're all used to today. Then came, and maybe it's like personal bias, like because I worked at Intel, but like then came CPUs and like personal computers, and that changed everything. So in a similar way, I started looking at it in a similar way, and that's when I came across Coda. And it's such a different way of approaching this blockchain problem that it felt to me like, oh my God, this is like this big shift from like the mainframe stage we're in right now to a more personal blockchain, if you will, stage. So.
Yeah. So yeah, so unpack that a little bit more. So like, I mean, that's a really interesting and important point of like when you look at the infrastructure and all of this period is built upon blockchain. So when you saw Coda, you're like, wow, this could be where the future is headed.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason for that is, so if you look at any, like let's just look at Bitcoin, right? That's what everyone knows, what everyone uses. And what does an average end user need to do to use Bitcoin right now? They can do one of two things. One of them is sign up for a service provider such as Coinbase, right? Mm-hmm. At which point you're essentially using a bank. Or you could run what's called a full node yourself, which includes downloading the entire blockchain for Bitcoin right now, it's 300 gigabytes. And having a good desktop computer and like knowing all the software intricacies, et cetera. In fact, one of the core Bitcoin developers, I think he's a core developer, but like he keeps a track of an annual track of how long it takes to get synced to the Bitcoin blockchain in a full node capacity from scratch. He does this every year. And last year it was 6.5 hours with a $2,000 desktop machine and, you know, being a core developer. So, so not a lot of people do that. There's in fact, like somewhere around 10,000 full nodes in the entire Bitcoin blockchain. So most people resort to using the Coinbases of the world, right? Which is fine until you start thinking, what is a blockchain, right? A blockchain is supposed to be this machine that allows anyone to trust each other without having to trust an intermediary, right? So I know that I can send a payment to you and that no intermediary can stop it, right? But when you use a service like Coinbase, you are trusting that intermediary. So we're kind of back, you know, to where we started. Which is a fundamental problem in this whole dynamic. What Coda instead does is it uses a revolutionary up-and-coming cryptography technique called zero-knowledge proofs to fix the blockchain size to a tiny, tiny proof. So right now it's 15 kilobytes, and that never grows. That never grows however long the blockchain might have been around or how much data it processes. So what this allows is for any average user, right, to connect to the blockchain from their smartphones or from, you know, like their normal laptops or whatever. So this allows not only for a lot more people to directly connect to this infrastructure. But also for developers, it becomes much, much easier because they don't then have to create complex middleware infrastructure. And then more importantly, it unravels this whole phenomenon in the industry known as called scalability trilemma, which is you know what supposedly prevents blockchains from scaling.
Yeah, and that is really interesting. So like the way that I kind of pictured it in my head as you were walking through it is to try to just do something like a Bitcoin having that 300 gigabytes worth of blockchain data, the fact that you're able to take something as huge as that and be able to compress it down into something that's kilobytes. So I think of like a computer file when it's like a gigabyte long, and then like if you press zip and it compresses it down very quickly that you can share it, that's very small, but then you can uncompress it and then you have this giant thing again. Is that kind of what's going on?
Kind of. So to give an idea of what the code of blockchain looks like, right? Mm-hmm. Underneath it, it actually looks like any traditional blockchain. So you don't... Okay. Like people ask us, for example, right? Like, oh, wow, it's 15 kilobytes. Then people start thinking about it. Then they're like, okay, but do I lose every data that, you know, used to be around for me to pick apart, like, or to uncompress, as you said, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever information I need to get from, you know, 10 months ago, some transaction that happened, et cetera. So it's not quite like that because that 15 kilobyte proof is kind of like an artifact of the entire blockchain. So the entire blockchain is still stored somewhere, right? Because people, yes, do want to refer to historical data. So we have these archive nodes, which all blockchains have, that stores the entire history of the blockchain. However, with Coda, what it enables users to do is to have the option to be able to only rely on this proof, to have full node security, which is, again, that you're not trusting any other intermediary. Bitcoin, for example, tries to do this with what's called light nodes or SPV nodes, or you know they have mm-hmm. other technical names for it, where ultimately what you're doing is you're syncing a part of the blockchain and you're relying on other intermediaries again to pass you the data. So what Coda does again is take this to the extreme to say, mathematically, we can give you this 15 kilobyte data, which allows you to connect to the chain without having to download the entire thing. If you still want to go ahead and you know refer to some transaction that happened 10 months ago, you can still do that like any other blockchain. Wow. But it gives you this power to not have to do that. Whereas other blockchains, yeah. You have to download the entire thing.
No, and that's super powerful. So give me some use cases of different companies that are either building on top of it or some different things that are being built with it right now.
Yeah, so we're in what's called a testnet stage. So like many of the new projects that are being launched, new blockchains, we're ultimately running like a fake network, right, to test with third parties. Right. So our latest live testnet featured like 400 users and 300 people producing blocks. So, you know, we coordinate, but still it's the community that runs it. So we're seeing a bunch of people develop interesting things. At this point, they're mostly on the infrastructure layer. So people doing block explorers or different algorithms to optimize certain economic activities in the blockchain. However, the vision we have for like a long-term use case for when we hit mainnet is ultimately about what we call open programmable money. And if you think of it, that's kind of like how Bitcoin set out to create, right? And then ultimately it ended up being digital gold because it doesn't scale. There's limited number of Bitcoins, yada, yada, yada. So with Coda, we ultimately want the people on the internet, right, to be able to use this as a form of money, both to have the capacity to be able to use it as money because it scales and it's very easy and cheap to connect to it, but also because people don't hoard it like they hoard Bitcoin. So Coda, for example, does not have cap supply. It has an inflation policy and all of that that, you know, again, the community controls, but it allows people to actually start spending and using this as money. The second use case is a bit more futuristic, and it's what we call verifiable applications. So without going into too much detail, if you think of Ethereum, for example, right, it kind of created this new term called decentralized applications or dApps, wherein you know you can run any application on a blockchain, but again, that application is you have to download, for example, if you want to connect to Ethereum, think of it like all the applications that have ever been created and all the history and data, right? Which is, again, very inefficient. So that's why Ethereum doesn't also scale as efficiently. Whereas if we kind of try and turn the concept a bit around this head and say, what if with this the cryptography that we're using in our blockchain, which is zero knowledge proofs, what if we could create applications that don't require all the data to be on the blockchain, but for someone to run the application on their own computer and then again produce a proof, which then is on the blockchain so that people can easily use and connect to these applications. So this is more of a proof of concept right now, which we're going to be developing SDKs for, but we're already seeing quite a lot of interest from various different industries, such as certain financial service providers or pharmaceutical manufacturers and others.
It's awesome. Yeah. I mean, a lot of great things on the horizon. So definitely everyone listening, go check it out. If you're a developer, especially go see how you can build some cool things on it. But thank you for explaining Coda and what's to come with it. Just transitioning a little bit, you know, there's been a lot going on in the world right now with everything with coronavirus and everything else. What do you think the future of crypto and blockchain will potentially look like in response to this?
Yeah. Big question. So I think this whole coronavirus thing has obviously tested, you know, the entire world, like all of our systems, all of our economies, and unfortunately, like none of them, in my opinion, have responded that well. So there's a lot of learnings that everyone needs to take. For our industry, for blockchains and crypto, I think the interesting thing is it does present an opportunity, right? Because the more people spend time on the internet, the more people rely on the internet to connect each other, the more there's an opportunity for a decentralized or digital money layer to become a necessity. So I think when Bitcoin came out, right, it was kind of like a opportunity where people, like the original creators, proposed this as like an improvement. Some people, you know, still to this day, many people are like, what is that? We don't need it. My Venmo works fine, et cetera. You know, you do see the problem still, as I mentioned at the beginning, if you change countries, whatever, but if you're in the same country, that was fine for them. But now people are saying that, okay, maybe I cannot entirely rely on my central bank or my politicians or whatever, right, to do the right responses. Exactly. So this gives everyone a chance to kind of take the control and say it's time for us to, you know, just be in our own fate, be in the control of our own fates. So I think that's a big opportunity for our space. The other thing I'm looking forward to is along with us, there is a lot of very impressive and creative projects that are launching this year. You know, there's maybe about 5 to 10 high quality teams that have come up with interesting projects in the past 2 years, specifically blockchains that are launching. And I'm really excited to see what they bring to the space because, right, we believe Coda is obviously the right way to approach this, but who knows, like we've all been wrong in this space. So I'm just excited to see like the vision of crypto being pushed forward by not just by us, but many, many different teams in the space.
For sure. And I really think that's a really strong point of even through all the bad that's happening right now, this is a huge opportunity for the space. When you think about why was Bitcoin made in the first place, it was in response to the last recession. And right now, a lot of its core principles are being challenged. And if it can show that it can stay consistent and strong, then the use case is that much stronger going towards the future and kicking off this next decade of why more people should be paying attention to this industry. So I really do think that there's a lot of opportunity in this space right now, even with everything that's going on in the world. But Emre, I really appreciate you spending some time with us, telling us about, you know, your background and Coda. But before you go, I always ask my guests, what is a final thought that you want to leave with all of our listeners here today?
Yeah, I think it's connected to the last point in that, you know, we're all in charge. So to the extent, especially for your listeners, they're already interested in crypto and blockchain, be more involved with projects. Don't just see this as an investment opportunity, which, you know, these days it's more challenging to keep looking at it just as an investment opportunity because of the volatility. But get involved with the projects, specifically with us. We just recently announced our Genesis program, which is a token grant program for active participants in our testnet. You know, you can go to CODA protocol, that's CODAprotocol.com, and check out both the project, but the Genesis program. We're giving sizable grants to up to 1,000 people that are active on our testnet. So, wow. And there's lots of opportunity, not just technical, but otherwise in the coming months where people can take part and, get some stake, literally, and pun intended, in the project. But also, take control. Just be a part of something that could make everyone's life easier.
Amazing. Well, everyone definitely go check that out. What are some different ways that people can connect with you and also learn a little bit more about CODA?
Yeah. So our website, definitely. On Twitter, I am ETEKIS. And also come to our Discord. There's a pretty active community there. And most of our development, actually all of our development, happens out in the public. So you can see what our team is doing, what our engineers are up to. There's a lot of Discord links on our website as well. So make sure to check that out.
Perfect. Well, again, really appreciate your time today. And for everyone listening, stay cryptocurrent. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Cryptocurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency. You'll receive daily emails Monday through Friday that are personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence. Are you an accredited investor looking to invest in cryptocurrency? Crescent City Capital can help. Go to crescentcitycapital.com for more information. If you're finding value in our content, please take 5 minutes to leave a 5-star review and a great comment. Also, please make sure to share this podcast with others. Hello, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the quality of this podcast. I can only thank my amazing producer, Andrew DeRitter, with DeRitter Productions, who has put this together. If you have any podcast, visual, or video needs, please go to DeRitterProductions.com. That's DERITTER Productions.com.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Cryptocurrent with Richard Carthon. We'll be back with more exciting developments from the world of blockchain and cryptocurrency next week. But until then, stay cryptocurrent.